This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. Today on CityCast Denver. A buzzy New Mexican spot just opened in Lohi, but the owner's former employers want to sue them out of business. So me and producer Paul Caroli are dissecting the lawsuit shaking Denver's restaurant scene. Plus, Casa Bonita at 50 and a new push to ban assault weapons. Today is Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Bree.
It's Casa Bonita's 50th birthday.
So today. We're talking about it.
Of course we're talking about it. We are the source for all things Casa Bonita.
Even the flimsiest, tiniest excuse to talk about it,
oh,
we're talking about it.
Oh, 50th birthday isn't a big deal to you?
I guess it's a big deal. I mean, it's 50 years, but some of them, they weren't open, you know? So maybe the 50th,
look,
I'll be celebrating in 2025, maybe.
Are we going to be holding the pandemic against people? Let's be realistic.
I don't know.
Okay. The thing is, like, I think part of the problem, though, is like there isn't really anything going on.
Yeah.
That we know of. So, what was that number? How many people are on the waiting list still to get in?
I wanted to gloat about this, actually.
Okay.
Denver 7 reported that there are between 400,000 and 600,000 people still on the email wait list. So if you haven't gotten your email, that's why. They're working their way through, you know, 500,000 people who want to get in there.
I can't imagine being a marketing person and being like, you have 600,000 people's email? That's like gold.
It's a very valuable
email list. Striking gold.
Yeah. Good for them.
I mean, we were on that list. You were on that list, right? Were you?
I think I'm still on it. Several emails. There are probably a lot of duplicates.
Oh, for sure. Because I signed up with like 50 emails.
Yeah. But I wanted to gloat about this because do you remember my prediction for 2024 around Casa Bonita?
That they would be reservation only? I know.
I said that they were not going to open for regular restaurant service this calendar year. And I think with a wait list this long,
I think you're right.
They're not going to make it through that until the end of the year. I'm feeling pretty confident about that one.
I think you were 100% correct on that. I know the Post did some fun reporting. It's hard because like what hasn't been done yet about Casa Bonita. But
at some point we'll talk about that story about the Salt Lake City Casa Bonita ripoff
that the former
owners sued out of existence. Yeah, the Mayan Adventure, I think it was called, something.
We should tap our Salt Lake City folks and
we'll
CityCast
go deep on
Salt
that
Lake
at some point.
For sure. Well, if you get to celebrate that Casa Bonita event in any way and you get to go, let us know how it is. I mean, Paul and I have already been, but I'm always looking for people's hot takes on it because I feel that it is still divisive.
Yeah.
I feel that this is still a divisive topic.
Yeah, and still interesting.
Yeah. It's part of us. But that's not the restaurant divisiveness we are actually waiting to talk about today because...
Thank you.
I've been thinking about this story all weekend because it was like on Reddit. It was on Instagram. I mean, it was everywhere. It's a war between two restaurants. Paul, what is going on?
Yeah. So this story broke last week. Business Den had it first, I think. But basically, there's a conflict happening between... a group of people who used to work together for a company called Lotus Concepts, which is a restaurant group run by a guy named Francois Cefiadine.
Great name.
Great name. Who's Beautiful. Just been around the club scene, downtown restaurant scene for, I don't know, decades. Probably.
I have probably
long time.
Escorted out of some of his establishments, willingly or unwillingly. So.
But they own like Wonder Yard, View House, and in particular of relevance to this story, My Neighbor Felix, which is a growing chain of casual... Mexican, you know, bar, restaurant type
places. A place to get margaritas,
from what
honestly.
I've heard. I've never actually been. But anyway, what Business End reported last week is that this company is suing a former employee named Casey Curiel for allegedly violating the non-compete clause in her contract when she opened a new restaurant on March 11th called Alma Fonda Fina, which is just over on the other side of... on the other side of the South Platte, you know, by
the
REI.
Thing.
Yeah, that Lohi Little Man ice cream area.
The Lohi thing. Yeah, it's kind of a neighborhood. It's kind of a booming neighborhood full of really good restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, this is interesting because this happens all the time. People leave restaurants mm-hmm. and start other restaurants. Mm-hmm. But this seems way more complex than that. Like you mentioned, a non-compete clause. What is going on with that aspect?
Yeah, I think that's really the heart of this, is this non-compete clause. I mean, the lawsuit from My Neighbor Felix, the Lotus Concepts folks, Francois Cefiodine, they claim that this case ultimately hinges on, and I'm quoting from the lawsuit, this case ultimately hinges on whether Alma Fonda Fina, a self-described contemporary Mexican fare restaurant intended to be a, quote, humble neighborhood spot for friends and family to gather, either one is a full-service casual Mexican restaurant, or two has a menu that primarily features craft Mexican cocktails, locally sourced ingredients, and drives 40% or more of its gross sales from the sale of alcohol. So it's all about, like, did this Casey Curiel open a restaurant that is competing with My Neighbor Felix within a certain radius?
Yeah,
because like that's what her contract stipulated, is that if she was ever to leave Lotus Concepts, she wouldn't be able to open a similar competing restaurant within, I think, 5 miles.
There's so many nuances here. I'm just looking at, thinking about how both sides could argue this.
Yes.
Because to me, the struggle here with that description that that Alma Fonda Fina gives of itself, it says it a humble neighborhood spot for friends and family to gather. It's fine dining, though.
Yeah, and that's their actual defense, is that it's not competing because it's fine dining, whereas My Neighbor Felix is more like, I mean, it's huge. You can see like more than 100 people in there, at least the one right near Alma Fonda Fina in Lohi. And then also, because they sell a lot of margaritas, they do a lot of their business in alcohol. Casey Curiel says that Alma Fonda Fina is not doing that much business in alcohol. So it's not competing in that same like bar restaurant space anyway.
And also, I mean, I know we're talking about these specific locations because this is a radius clause issue. But also, My Neighbor Felix is like a chain in a local chain, in that it has other versions of it. And if you want to think about how big this place is, for old Denver folks, you may remember the Trail Dust restaurant off of I-25.
Okay.
Massive restaurant. It had a slide inside of it. It was a country themed restaurant where they cut you, if you wore a tie, and they cut your tie off.
Yeah.
But that's where My Neighbor Felix is now. So that's the size of that restaurant. And to me, in my mind, I can see how these concepts, while serving similarly veined food, are doing different things.
Yeah, definitely both Mexican, but definitely different types of meal, different types of experience. But I think the size of My Neighbor Felix and the fact that it's a big company has affected the way this story has been interpreted. I don't know how
so?
You're feeling about that, the way people are reading this and reacting to it. I just saw on the Denver's food subreddit, someone put up a post that they said, please join me in boycotting My Neighbor Felix over this. You know, they're trying to punish these former employees, and they're trying to eliminate their own competition and boost their own business by getting rid of these disloyal, you know, former employees who just want to, you know, take a crack at the big man or anything. But so it's like kind of like a David and Goliath thing, if you listen to these people. But I don't know. I mean, can you see the other side of it too? Or where is your heart right now?
I mean, I don't, it's so tough because I haven't eaten at them.
Yeah, same.
And I feel like I would need to do that to understand. But Molly Martin at Westward, this is how she described the dining experience. She said, from a diner's perspective, comparing the two is like pitting Olive Garden against a small trattoria. Yes, they both have some relation to the same cuisine, but the same type of restaurant, they are not.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, how it's described, I see these things as very differently. I would go to one for one thing. I would go to the other for something else, another reason. And I,
yeah.
Isn't that how restaurants are all competing with each other, essentially?
For sure. I think so. But it's a contract. It's a contract, and
that
it's trade
wild.
Secrets. And what do you define as a trade secret? You know, and the other thing is, competition is not just for customers, you know, it's for other things too, like suppliers, for resources, for ingredients. Maybe the folks at my neighbor Felix feel like they have the best hookup for, like, I don't know, you know, some specific Mexican spice or ingredient or component. And now Casey Curiel is going to be trying to get that same ingredient. And let's say it runs out and she got it all, you know, that actually would affect their business.
I can see from that argument how the trade secrets thing, because that part was so wishy-washy to me. It was like, trade secrets in a restaurant?
I mean, like I said, I'm just guessing at that,
for sure.
By the way. I have idea.
For sure. But I mean, I guess I can see an argument for both sides in that perspective. What I found most interesting about this is people love to talk shit about food they don't like. And the mud was slinging on the internet about the food situation.
What'd you see?
I mean, it was just like people being like, yeah, you go to my neighbor Felix to get messed up, like to get wasted on margaritas. You don't go there because the food is like delicious. It's not bad. I didn't hear anybody say it was terrible, but it's like the food's not necessarily the draw.
Interesting.
As to where Alma Fondafina's like, you know, it's a 36 seat restaurant. Like that is very chef focused, right?
Yeah.
If we know anything. We had that wonderful chef, remind me his name.
Michael Diaz de Leon.
This was the restaurant he said, this is the restaurant I like. This is what I want. And he's
the person he's excited about.
He's a person that thinks about food in a whole different way, I think, than the average diner. And I don't know. I just liked seeing people. I love when people share their true feelings about how they like a restaurant or not.
I couldn't agree more. So. And I can't wait till the principals who are involved in this lawsuit are talking a little bit more openly about this, because all of these people seem to have been really close or formerly really close. Like, it's not just Casey Curiel, who was a former employee. Her husband, who she started Alma Fondafina with, is Johnny Curiel, who's the former culinary director for Lotus Concepts broadly.
I've worked in restaurants. I mostly worked in chain restaurants. I worked at Chili's and Applebee's, but I also worked at some smaller places, a really weird rotisserie restaurant in DTC. At any rate, there's a thing about restaurants where you become comrades with your fellow employees, you've survived things. Like that's the whole, you know, you're in the weeds, everything's on fire. Like, oh my God, you know, you just go through these cycles day in and day out of stress. And I think that it's like bonds, it's the trauma bonding thing of restaurants. So I bet they know so many things about each other. I mean, it's a gossipy place like any other workplace.
Yeah.
And I think that could extend to trade secrets or things that they know about the business that, you know, maybe they did sign an NDA for a reason about.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for our sake we get a few more of those juicy details coming out over the course of this trial.
Oh my God, if you have any juicy details also.
Yes.
We love gossip.
Call in, text us, leave us a message, 720-500-5418.
Hot Goss, Hot Restaurant, Goss Hotline. Please let us know.
All right, let's go to a quick break and come back and talk about guns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, Bree, next up. Last week at the State House, Denver Democratic Representatives Tim Hernandez and Elizabeth Epps, as well as a group of other co-sponsors, brought back a hotly debated proposal to ban assault weapons in Colorado.
Yes.
This is a hot topic, Bree. What's happening?
I mean, it's a gun control conversation. It's a conversation we feel like we have every year through our legislation. So this is House Bill 1292, called the Prohibit Certain Weapons Used in Mass Shootings Bill. It passed the House Judiciary Committee 7-3 on a party line vote last Wednesday. And the thing was, I think this was a similar bill to one that was killed last year.
Yeah.
So people were really watching it. This proposal would ban the sale, purchase, transfer, or manufacture of assault weapons. But the bill does not ban the possession of those weapons. So it's about the sale.
So no one's going to come take your guns.
No.
You just aren't allowed to buy new guns.
Yeah. So it's about
this specific type of gun.
Yes. And there's very specific definitions of these types of firearms that are included in this. Semi-automatic rifles and pistols that have fixed large capacity magazines have the ability to accept detachable magazine. I mean, just like this is detailed stuff. So it's something that's really been thought out. It passed this initial committee, but more than 550 people signed up to testify for and against this measure.
Wow.
Meaning this committee hearing started on a Tuesday morning last week and ended on Wednesday at like midnight.
Oh my God.
Okay. So this is, I mean, this also speaks to what a contentious issue this is in Colorado.
Still.
And I think why we have not been able to move forward on legislation, I think in a certain way. I just am thinking about, we started this show 3 years last week, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we start the show early? We launched a couple days early.
Because of a shooting.
Because of a mass shooting, the shooting in King Soopers in Boulder. Since then, we've had the Club Q shooting. We've had all the folks that were murdered in the tattoo community. I mean, there have been so many situations. And including, I think, the unsolved murder of East High School student Luis Garcia. And that's what brought me to this story, was East High School students that run the East Students Demand Action Group posted this incredible video on Instagram last week, sort of poking fun at some of the folks testifying against the bill. And when I say poking fun, I mean they're just reading the they're reading the testimony directly.
Okay.
They're not adding any editorial to it. Should we listen to it?
I would love to. I haven't seen this.
Okay.
Hey guys.
What's up? We compiled a handful of quotes from the assault weapons testimonies.
Here are our favorites. First it will be the guns, then the knives, then the martial arts centers. I've slept with a loaded rifle next to me for years and years.
If these guns were a problem, it would be known.
When someone attacked our towers, we didn't ban planes.
I offered to teach the young kid about firearm safety.
The Second Amendment is an unalienable right that comes straight from God himself.
Instead of banning these firearms, you should ask why there's a bill decreasing protection in schools.
I will end with a quote from Thomas Jefferson.
You call me tyrant!
It's pretty obvious to me that there's an agenda that we are being disarmed.
I don't disagree with you that murder is illegal.
I don't trust you guys at all!
I don't trust you guys with all the guns.
The Second Amendment's not for hunting, folks. It's for usurpers of liberty.
January 6th.
Lord, no, we will make an example of you.
Okay, that last one, that was a little bit threatening.
We'll make an example of you.
That's odd to hear from a teenage student. Interesting. That's fun.
It's fun in that this is a serious issue.
Yeah.
These students, these are kids who have had to grow up in this post, I think people call it a post-Columbine world. I think I was a freshman or sophomore in college when Columbine happened. So I did not experience any of the school, what it's like to prepare for this kind of stuff. This is what these kids have been dealing with their entire lives. And I think, again, it's very serious. But at some points, it's sometimes nice to be able to laugh a little bit about it, because we have to, like, there has got to be some levity. Like, sitting through hours and hours and hours of testimony, I would find some of it funny too.
Yeah. What strikes me about that is how different it is from what we heard from some of the same students from East High last year. And I wonder how that's going to shape the debate at the State House, because last year these students were walking out of class. They were going down to the Capitol. They were like getting up in lawmakers' faces and fighting over these gun bills. And that was, I think, because of the shooting you mentioned at East High School. This year we have not seen a shooting like that. It's not fresh in the same way.
Yeah, but I also think maybe this is a new tactic, because the confrontations maybe didn't work. The walking out didn't work. You know what works really well? Shame. Embarrassing people. Maybe this approach is about sort of embarrassing folks, and we're putting them on blast with these students who believe, like, what you're saying is kind of BS. This is what I think this is what I'm taking from them. This is all editorializing, but I just see it as a new approach. It's also an arena where young folks shine, social media, and they're using it to their advantage to get the message out. I guarantee this video would probably move a lot faster through social media than something that was more serious, right? And so it could be just bringing more attention to the cause through a different lens. Is kind of how I saw it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's interesting. I think if with the temperature turned down a little bit, it'll be a different kind of debate.
Well, and we've got a ways to go too. I think the bill still has to be considered by the full House, which the Denver Post says has a strong chance of passing because the chamber is dominated by a Democratic supermajority. And then it goes to the Senate, where it's sort of questionable. According to the Post, Senator Tom Sullivan, who we've had on the show before, his son was one of the victims of the 2012 Aurora movie theater shooting. He has expressed concerns about the efficacy of pursuing a ban targeting high-powered firearms. He said the bill would not save as many lives as other gun legislation under consideration. So it may not even have support of folks in the gun control sphere.
Interesting.
We'll be watching for that, too. And I do, we'll share, we did a great interview with Clara and Gracie Taub, two of the students who were in the East Students Demand Action Group last year. I think they may have graduated. I'm not sure, but it was nice to hear from them, from the students' perspective. And we had that interview with Tom Sullivan as well. So
we'll put links to all that.
Yeah. It's a bill we'll be watching.
Okay, let's move on. Last thing today, way we end every Tuesday show, we always love hearing from you, our brilliant and hilarious listeners, about the things you care about. So every Tuesday, we share a comment or answer one of your questions that's come through the CityCast Denver hotline. This time, we've got a voicemail from Eric.
Hi, this is Eric from Thornton. I am originally from Texas, and I thought I would share some information about Buc-ee's. So Buc-ee's is not a truck stop. In fact, they have signs that says truckers cannot even park in the parking lot. It is a regular vehicle gas station with 112 or 16 gas stalls. Secondly, the extreme piece that Buc-ee's owner's son did an impropriety, if we looked at every business in Denver and looked at the skeletons in the closet in their family, that'd be a little bit of a stretch. As far as the Christian part of it, it probably means that you have never been to Texas, because in Texas, churches on every corner are like our liquor stores on every corner. That is also coming from somebody who does not practice Christianity. So anyway, not angry. Love your show. But I thought you guys should know a little bit more about the history of Buc-ee's. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for calling in. That is a very helpful clarification. Yeah, we can file this one in the Paul Was Wrong folder. I repeatedly called it a truck stop on Friday.
Paul,
we're talking about Buc-ee's.
I also think that, though, because of where it is. It's not like they opened it at the corner of Broadway and Colfax.
Yeah.
They opened it out where truckers may pass
it. It feels like a truck stop too. It's the
truck
scale
adjacent
of a truck.
But it's helpful that Eric let us know you can't park your truck there, which is what a lot of truck stops are for. Mm-hmm. One other point too I want to make is I brought up that thing about the owner's son because my friend in Texas, when that story broke, when it was like all over social media, she texted me and was like, "You have to know this as a person from Texas."
Yeah.
This guy's kid sucks. So I agree with Eric. We could pull the skeletons out of every closet. But I didn't even go looking for that information. It was sent to me. Also, Eric, I appreciate that you let us know you were angry, but I got that from you. I thought you were just sharing information with us.
And it's helpful.
So,
appreciate it.
Thank
Always
you
love
so
hearing
much.
This kind of thing. Thanks for calling in. Okay, let's just do one more. Here's a comment from a listener called Don L. Hi, Paul and Bree. Heard you talking about Johnson's Corner, and I completely agree with Paul's mother-in-law. It used to be amazing. The cinnamon rolls were fantastic. The biscuits and gravy made me weak in the knees. Ugh. The perfect amount of sausage and pepper in the gravy and biscuits that were buttery and flaky, and the staff was top-notch. I wish I went to that Johnson's Corner.
Also, this is Don. This is my dream meal at any diner is biscuits and gravy, and I do also wish we could travel back in time and have that, Paul.
Don goes on, when our boys were younger, one-year-old and three-year-old, we lived in Mead.
Oh,
beautiful, sweet little Mead. They would always wake up before the sun, ready to go. I loved the mornings when we would head to Johnson's Corner for coffee and breakfast and coffee. Two cups.
Lots of coffee.
The lovely ladies that predominantly made up the wait staff never cared that my husband and I were hardly awake or that my kids were stuffing pancakes in their mouths while syrup went everywhere. They always served us with a smile, extra crayons, and fresh coffee, whether we showed up at 5 a.m. or 10 a.m. It just hasn't been the same since it was sold. We have such fond memories there, but stopped going because it was was just too hard to see what it has become. Thank you for the amazing work you do with CityCast. Don L.
Don, that description of the wait staff and your experience is so much what the classic diner does well. And we just don't have those any. We have a couple, but we don't have them in the same way anymore where they're ubiquitous. You could just pop into it. I was just talking to some friends about this weekend. It's like, it's the perfect place to go no matter who you're with. And I want to go to this version of Justice Corner.
Me too.
It sounds so lovely. Thank you for sharing those memories.
Yeah, thanks for writing in, Don.
Those were great.
Wow.
Well, can I share one piece of goss I got after our show last week about fashion, about politician fashion? I had a friend message me on Instagram and say, just so you know, Governor Polis does not tip his local vegan ice cream purveyor. So
what?
I mean,
what is to say more?
I can't say too much. She just said, I feel a way about our governor because he does not tip at the place that I work. So
wow.
I know. Governor I just Paul's love those sorts of random things people send
for
me.
Vegan ice cream.
Brutal, right?
That is brutal.
Ugh. Anyway. Well, thanks, Paul. This was fun.
Yeah. See you next time.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell Francois Safiadin about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you later.